Well, well, well. Good morning. Thanks for choosing to start your morning off correctly with the Hot Mic Show. It is currently 03:27 here in the morning in Los Angeles. I'm working night shift right now, so I feel like a walking zombie. But the good thing is, when Sarah's asleep and the whole world's asleep, I'm in here. I'm into maybe some sort of website design or looking at my Amazon. And right now I'm hoping that I don't talk too loud to wake Sarah up because she has work in the morning. But I was sitting here thinking, I didn't release an episode last week because I'm in the middle of launching some merchandise as well as a website and a website to house the merchandise on. But I get busy, like really, really busy. And I know I take on way too many tasks at one time, which makes me less productive on each one. But it's just the way I am. I've been trying to work on it. You know, we all have those flaws. And for me specifically, it is managing time amongst different products. And this episode is kind of inspired by something that's happened in my life. It's, you know, surrounding yourself with the right people. And that's such a generic way to say it, but it's has such an important message behind it. And I want to tell you two stories, one that involves good and one that involves the bad. So sit tight. Thanks for listening to Hot Mic Show. I'll talk to you in a second.
Welcome to the Hot Mic Show with Austin Alexander.
So there I was. I was in Bahrain, you know, working Harbor Patrol. I would work night shift there as well sometimes. Every 3 months, I believe, we would rotate between days and nights. And we worked 12s there. So switching between days and nights, it was brutal because it's a complete 180-degree rotation and a complete 180-degree schedule shift. So you had to quickly manage your time wisely so you'd be able to still get everything that you needed to get done, like working out, meal prep, sleep, as well as getting ready for work. So every morning I'd get off probably around 6 or 6:30, I believe. And, you know, we were tired, we were lacking sleep. And by the time that we got off, we were working, I think it came out to be like a 13 or 14 hour shift because you have to go in 30 minutes for guard mount. You have to put all your gear on. You have to get your flow coats ready. You have to make sure all the boat reports are done. And you have to grab your gear and bring out a guard mount. After guard mount, probably takes about 15, 20 minutes, you would march down there to the boats. And you have to ensure that you relieve the off-going crew in enough time for them not to get mad at you. So by the end of the work shift, we had ended up working probably 13, 14 hours. And sometimes, I'm not going to lie, it was brutal because of the heat and everything. But we made it. We made through it. We survived. And it was a good time. But after we would get off work in the mornings, a lot of us would be super, super tired, and none of us wanted to admit it, but we would go to the gym. And we didn't want to admit that we were tired because we were, you know, wanted to be like the ones that were headstrong and like, oh, Brad, you going to the gym today? Yeah, of course, you. Yeah, of course. And after those shifts, we would take our pre-workout, we head straight to the gym. And there was a little group of probably 15 or 16 of us, you know, some of us from landside security, some of them from harbor security. And there was probably about 5 or 6 of us in harbor security and probably about 10 or 15 from the landside security. And we would see each other in there. They all work night shift. And, hey, what's up, Tillman? Hey, what's up, Greg? You know, we would all have a good time. And we surrounded ourselves with the people, those people that would continuously go to the gym. It didn't matter if they were tired or not. They were worried about us thinking that they were lazy. You know, if one of us missed the gym one day, we would call them, we would harass them the next day, and we would, you know, it was just the end of the world. Like, everybody would rag on you, and so nobody wanted to miss the gym. It was a good little network of people. And for the longest time, I found myself going to the gym strictly because I didn't want to get ragged on for the next week or week and a half. You know, I didn't want people to think I was lazy, even though I was tired after those shifts. I'll be honest. I mean, I think anybody would be. I didn't want them to think I was the weak-minded one, you know, and then they didn't want us to think the same of them. So we would all show up to the gym, and it was like a never ending thing for 2 years. You know, we would all be at the gym and it was a great time. And feeling so, you know, good about going to the gym came from surrounding myself with the people that were like-minded, the people that use the gym to battle stress, use the gym to battle, you know, tiredness from those long shifts. It was like a morning high. You know, we all use the gym to deal with stress in our life, and it was just a good little group. We would surround ourselves with like-minded people, and even though we all had our little problems, we talked them out. We talk about what's going on, you know, new pre-workouts that were out, girls that we were talking to, you know, boys that the girls were talking to, and just, it was a good group of people. And I miss those days. It's really hard to find that nowadays, I promise you, especially stateside. You know, nobody wants to go to the gym. Everybody's got, quote, quote, busy, busy schedules, when in reality, they just don't make fitness a priority, or a lot of them don't. Some of them do, but, you know, there's never been a caravan of people like that that I've ever met in my entire life since Bahrain. So I want to bring it back a little bit to basic training. So that was an example of a good group of people, you know, surrounding yourself with the right people in order for me to push myself harder and go to the gym when I didn't want to. So I was in basic training. I've talked about this story a lot on my YouTube channel, but I don't think I've talked about it on my podcast. It's the time that I literally almost had my leg amputated because of an infection. So I was in boot camp, and there I was. Everything was doing completely fine. We were going to dive motivation in the morning, where we would meet the dive instructors, and they would PT us for about 2 or 3 hours. Everything was good. Division 807, we were all like a band of brothers in there. We were all really, really close people, and I started to experience a little bit of some knee pain, and which, you know, was cool. I didn't really care. And then a week later, it was even worse knee pain. It was almost to the point where I couldn't walk. And probably like the same, like I can remember walking home from this thing called team trainer, where you trained for firefighting and you would, you know, grab the hose and relieve the nozzleman and all that silly stuff the Navy does. And we were marching back to the compartment, and I can remember my knee hurting so bad at the time. And also I remember my kind of like where in my crotch area was hurting, where your lymph nodes are. And I was sweating, even though it was cold, I was sweating on the way back, and I was like, something's not right. Well, I didn't want to tell the petty officers because we were probably 2-3 weeks away from graduating. I was trying to push myself. I was trying to graduate with my division as bad as I could because I wanted to get out of there as fast as I could. I think once, you know, 5 or 6 weeks goes by in boot camp, you kind of get over it, and you just want to leave. And so we were marching back home, and it got to the point where I could not march back in ranks anymore, and I kind of fell to the side, and petty officer's like, what, Alexander? He's like, you good? And I was like, I fell to the back of the division. We were called stragglers. So I was kind of hobbling along. I didn't want to tell the petty officer what was going on, and I got back to the compartment, and I tried to pull my NW pant up over my knee, and I couldn't. It was so swollen that I couldn't pull my Navy working uniform pant leg over my knee, and I knew something was wrong. So I dropped the trousers, of course, I had my PT shorts on, and I see my knee, and it's about the size of half of the size of a Red Delicious. It was literally like a softball on my knee, and I'm not using that as an exaggeration. That's how bad it was. And the petty officer saw my knee, and they freaked out. They started cussing. They're like, hey, you know, BM1, get over here, which was my other RDC. So BM1 comes over there, and he's like just looking at it in disbelief. And they wrote me an emergency medical chit to medical. So there I was. It was probably 10:30, 11:30 at night. I was marching over there by myself to medical. I think it's probably like a mile and a half on the other side of recruit training command because I was in ship number 9, I believe, the Arleigh Burke. And so I marched to medical. I knock on the door and to the duty corpsman. I probably look like a zombie. And so he runs up to the door. He opens it for me. I hobble in. I tell him what's wrong. He calls in the emergency medical staff, which was a commander. You know, if they call in a commander at 11:30 at night, you know there's something wrong. So she takes a look at my knee, and she's like, this is not good. They take me to the hospital, and I can remember I felt great because getting off of that base, man, it was like, it was crazy. I was driving past Taco Bell and McDonald's and just having a taste of the outside world. It was fun. Anyways, I got to the hospital, and it wasn't too fun anymore. The doctor took me in. They established I had a fever of 103. They were looking at my knee, doing a whole bunch of press tests and everything on it, and they're like, okay, we're going to put you in the ICU just because we don't have any normal beds available. At the time, I was thinking, yeah, right, there's something seriously wrong with me. But they didn't want to tell me that. So they took me in the ICU. I fell asleep. I woke up, and there was like 10 doctors poking my knee with like pencils. They had these little markers. They were just poking on it. And they had drawn a little purple line around the infection the previous night when I was asleep. I woke up and the infection had completely spread 3 or 4 inches outside of that line. And this was my right knee, keep in mind. So the purple marker was completely taken over by the infection. You could see the red line clearly 2 or 3 inches outside of the purple marker. And I was like, well, this is not good. So they ran some more tests on me and whatnot. I believe they took, they stuck a needle in there and took some fluid out to determine what type of fluid it was and why it was infected. So they ran a test on the fluid and come to find out it was MRSA. It was, MRSA is a form of staph. It's methicillin resistant Staphylococcus aureus, which is definitely a mouthful, but it is a staph that is resistant to methicillin, which is what they treat staph with, I believe. And so they immediately, the doctor said, I'm going to be straight up with you. You know, this infection is, it's way worse than it should be. And right now we're going to give the best thing that we got for it. He said, I'm going to be upfront with you. If this does not stop the infection, we are going to have to scan your knee to see if the infection is in your joint. If it's in your joint, we're going to have to amputate your leg. And I don't know if he was being serious with me or if he was exaggerating. And I was like, well, shit, okay, well, I'm going to lose my leg. And I remember at the time I'd called my mom and told her. And, you know, the first thing she hears from me in 3 or 4 weeks is, hey, mom, you're going to cut my leg off. So I'm sure she was freaking out. But anywho, a few hours pass, they get the results back, and it was MRSA, and they start shooting antibiotics at it called Zosyn. I was hooked up on all types of IVs. I was feeling terrible but mentally good at the same time because I had access to food that was a little better than boot camp, and I had access to a phone and Facebook through a little iPad TV they had given me. So 2 days pass, and they keep drawing this purple line around my knee, and it's just getting worse and worse. And it came to the point where the red line was around my ankle and the other red line was around my hip. So my entire leg was swollen to the point like probably 1.5 times the normal size. And when I say that, I'm not even kidding with you. I couldn't get up to go to the bathroom. It was terrible. I had a bedpan. I could not move. And come to think of it, I wasn't really scared. I had finally just come to terms with, oh, well, I'm going to lose my leg because of this infection. But luckily, that did not happen. I need to get back to the point at this point. But luckily, I was in the hospital for a week and a half. And by the time I had gotten back, all of my division had graduated. All my RDCs had already told my division that I was dead, which was funny to me. And when I got back, they put me in this unit called the Recruit Convalescent Unit. That's where all of the recruits go that are quote-unquote broken. You know, sailors with stress fractures or sailors that couldn't pass the physical readiness test or the swim portion, they put them all in this one division in order to heal and recover. Well, my specific situation was pretty unique. You know, I didn't have any broken bones. I was just trying to let the bursa sac in my knee heal and become less inflamed. And when I went to the medical across the street, I would always, you know, talk to this lieutenant. I would be like, "Lieutenant, please, you got to get me out of there," because everyone in the RCU was just completely negative. And, you know, I was stuck in the RCU, and I was depressed in there. It was terrible because the people that were surrounding me, they were all negative. They were, you know, there was no hope. They were all hopeless. Some of them were going back home. Some of them had been on hold there for 5 or 6 months. It was terrible, and I hated it. And I remember sneaking into the compartment one night and calling my mom. I'm like, "Mom, I hate it here. It's terrible." And that was because the people that were surrounding me were just completely negative. And, you know, they didn't really have a direction, which is the way they were going. The Navy was kind of just had them in limbo and not really giving them a clear direction. So I understand why they were negative, but, you know, all that negative energy was making me negative too and making me depressed. And so what I'm trying to say is surrounding yourself with the right people can change everything. You know, it's widely known that one of the best ways to improve on a skill is to practice it with someone who's better than you, i.e. surrounding yourself with people that are better than you and more positive than you. Yeah, you're going to have to work harder for sure. You're going to have to think faster. You're going to have to do more and learn more fundamentals maybe. And even if it's a gym partner that's stronger than you, you're going to have to sweat. And you're going to be sore, but after a while, your skills are going to improve. And eventually, you might even be good enough to teach someone else the same thing that they taught you. You know, whether it's a group of people or one person, you need to constantly be surrounding yourself with people that are going to push you and motivate you to go more. In my opinion, this is the best way to grow. You know, you can learn stuff out. You can figure stuff out by yourself. But if you have someone there constantly to kind of mentor you and surround yourself with, it's going to get you really, really far. And another thing that you're going to have to do, I know those of you that listen to, you know, Gary Vee, Tony Robbins, they say the same thing all the time. It's you got to say goodbye to the negative Nancys. You know, there's so many of them. When somebody sees you succeeding at something, whether it's something small or something big, they're going to try to bring you down. You know, everybody has the colleagues or friends or coworkers who are constantly in turmoil or have, you know, serious drama in their life. And they have no way to deal with it other than to try to bring others down with them as well. And it's a harsh reality. What's far worse is they can't help but try to bring everybody down because, you know, it's their only form, it's their only outlet. Life is definitely hard enough. We don't always win, but there are always going to be obstacles and naysayers along our path to success. And during the times, nothing feels better than having someone who you can share your fears and doubts with, you know, friends or mentors that not only listen to you, but also cheer you on to be the best that you can be. So my advice to you guys would be find and focus on the relationships that you build with people who can share their wins and positive vibes and help you realize that you can do the same. Life is way too short for the negativity. So a lot of entrepreneurs and business people aspire to be the smartest person in the room on every topic or subject, but if you're always the smartest person, you actually limiting yourself. Think about that. You always want to surround yourself with people that are better than you and they can teach you something. So that's my advice to you guys. I've learned this the hard way, you know, and that's another reason that it's sad to say, that's another reason that I'm ready to get out of the Navy, because not a lot of people, you know, not everybody thinks the same way that I do. You have a lot of people that are negative. And that's why I go into work and I try to be obnoxiously positive. That's why I always, you know, I'm always saying, hey, guys, let's get this bread, like trying to cheer everybody up, even though I know lots of people are miserable there. And I'm just kind of over it. You know, you can't really, you don't pick who you get to work with. You don't pick who's in your chain of command or who your coworkers are. And so I'm just ready to start surrounding myself with people that are better than me and people that I can constantly learn from. And I suggest that you guys do the same. And I know you have maybe a specific scenario in your head. If you're working at Waba Grill or if you're working at Lowe's or whatever, there's probably that coworker that's not the most positive person that you wish you could kind of separate yourself from. Try your best to do so. You do not need that negative energy in your life, because like I said earlier, life is way too short for the negative Nancys and the naysayers. So, guys, that is my message to you on this beautiful Monday morning, even though it's completely dark out here at the time of this podcast. But I hope you guys get what I'm saying. I hope you guys understood my message today. I will be talking to you again next week on the Hot Mic Show. Remember, if you haven't left a review yet, I would really appreciate it. I think we have probably about 153, 154 reviews on the Hot Mic Show, which is, frankly, a lot more than I thought we would have. You know, we're approaching 6,000 total downloads in 4 months, which is pretty good to me. So I just want to say thanks for the support and everybody that has been listening to the podcast and showing up every week. I will talk to you guys in the next episode